The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Hey, welcome back. Second half is live. We are waiting word on what happens with the CFP. We may know today whether we'll have a 12-team playoff in 2 years. We're struggling to come up with four schools to put in the playoff right now. Can you imagine when we get 2 years from today, who will be 13, 14, and 15? And if 9, 10, and 11 lose, will 15 or could the 16 team? We're getting ready for some absolute chaos, which is good. That's where college football should be about. Let's get back to the calls. And Danny is up next in Texas. Hello, Danny.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum, how you doing, sir?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I want to call it Tom in Auburn. Warren McVay was a freshman in 1964 at University of Houston, so he played in 65, 66, 67. Jerry Levis,
oh, yeah,
one of the first African-American players to play at SMU, did come to Auburn, I believe, in 1968. And I know that because I go to a Bible study and the guy said he kind of beat Auburn pretty bad that day, but he played with a quarterback, Nick Kitchen. The reason I know this, I'm about your age. I was born in March of 1956, and I think your birthday's after that, so we're about the same age.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. By the way, you mentioned Jerry Levis. He was one of the great players of that era.
Yes, he was. They won the SMU a lot of football games, running punts back, kickoffs back. They went to the Cotton Bowl. December 31st, 1966, I was 10 years old. My cousin was a linebacker for SMU. He said a guard from Georgia told him, said, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here to kick your ass. And I said, Billy Bob, what did he do? He said, he kicked my ass all day. I said, well, I thought he probably did. Because the score was 24-9, and I hate Georgia to this day. It's personal. I like
That's funny.
I like Kirby. But I'm an OU fan. I like SMU and Roll Tide. I like Bear Bryant. I think it's the greatest of them all. But long-time listener, first-time caller. But just kind of a history lesson. I like what that guy from Auburn, I think he'd lost kind of the name on Jerry. But Jerry Levis was a stud.
Hey, well, it's really great to hear from you. Thank you, Danny. Brought back some old memories there. Vance is up next. Hello, Vance.
Hey, buddy.
Hey there.
Well, I'm going to go on one of my typical rants here, if you'll afford me.
Yes, I will.
You had a caller call up early talking about how bad Bryce Young was. And this is outrageous. The only reason any receiver on that team even caught a football this year was because of Bryce Young. And I mean this by saying this. 15 penalties against Texas. 17 against Tennessee. Well, what do you mean? That's a lot. I'm like, no, but that's not the whole story here. At the end of the Tennessee game, they committed 66 penalties. And if I do my math correctly, that does not equal half of 15 and 17 doesn't equal half of 66. They had one penalty almost free game this season. It was against Mississippi State. Then you go the 12th game of the season, 12th game, we got our gunner on the kickoff team lined up a yard offside. Boom. That was penalty number, I don't know what it was. I think they committed 13. Then we have a timeout. A timeout. And come out on the field with 12 players on the field. My point in all this is when did that team progress one out this entire season? They were the same all year. Oh, and here's another thing. Where's Jonathan Allen, De'Ron Payne, A'shaun Robinson, Quinnen Williams? Well, they're all in the NFL, dummy Vance. Oh, I know. Don't tell me they couldn't play in the college football because the NFL is the top of the top. But here's the problem. Why do you think even Louisiana Monroe was able to double-team Will Anderson? Because they didn't have any meat eaters in the middle. None. We don't have receivers. And all I'm going to say is he either cans those coaches and starts over, because they're not going to win anything next year. No, they will not. They're too young. They need to change things. Where is our receiving core that we are used to? Because we have every right to be used to them. And Bryce Young's don't grow on trees, Paul. They don't. Those guys, and I don't even know if they're going to play in the bowl game. What do you think about that?
My gut feeling is what I heard in Tuscaloosa the other day is that the top players are considering not playing. That doesn't mean they won't be able to reverse their thoughts. You don't know how persuasive someone is going to be, but I'm not optimistic. I'll put it that way.
Now, see that. Then it's their turn. All I'm going to say is, if he comes back with any of those coaches, any of them, then he ought to put a white hat on and walk out on the field with a white flag. And somebody can say, "Are you talking about Nick Saban?" You're damn right I am. He's the head guy. Now, you had a guy on Friday that brought up a great point, young man that really seemed to know a lot about
the program.
It was
Stephen M. Smith you're talking about.
Well, this was a sharp fella, and because everything he said made sense. And he said, you know, Nick Saban's more of a CEO right now. You know what? He's 71 years old. Am I correct?
He just turned 71, yes.
He has a right to be the CEO. But he's still the CEO. These people, I feel as though they slapped every player on that butt this season and said, go get them, guys. Just go get them. Because, Paul, I contend still, they did not progress one iota.
Vance, when you hear a narrative that a lot of us have participated in, I've said it many times. I've said this felt like this was one of his best teams. That is not something that I created. That came directly from Saban to other people. He felt like this was potentially his best team, at least his best team in 5 or 6 years. And that's the biggest – that's such a big disappointment to me. And I know a lot of people get upset when we talk about what they didn't accomplish versus what they did, but I fully expected them to run the table.
Oh, listen, I knew 2 years ago, the COVID year. When I say I knew something, I believed it. I believed they were by far the best team in the country, and they proved it. That was a great team. Okay, last year was so-so, and I mean, I hate to pound on this man, but I got a buddy of mine, and we talked. He is as diehard Alabama fan as there is. And we were talking, we both thought this football team this year was going to go be his third undefeated team. That's what I thought was going to happen. Instead, they have been the most aggravating, agitating, irritating football team to watch I've ever seen. I think you can tell I'm in a great mood.
No, and I think that's the frustrating part. Now, Saban was he made a big deal about last year being a rebuilding year, and I got upset, but I understood his basic premise, a new quarterback, a new this, a new that. And the question is, did they have the talent? And he felt like they did. And what did they do with it? And the easy thing to blame is are the coordinators, and I have no doubt they'll be gone. However they're gone, they're gone. They're not coming back. That's a good place to start, but ultimately, is Nick Saban the same today as he was 2 years ago or 4 years ago or 6 years ago? And I think that's a big determination you have to make.
Well, Paul, I mean, listen to me acting like everyone thinks like me, and I know they don't, but whenever you see a head coach fire their coordinators, that's a yellow flag right then. That's a yellow flag. But he doesn't have a choice.
No.
He doesn't have
and
a
Vance,
choice.
They will not be fired. I fully expect both to get jobs, and it will be sugar-coated and window-dressed like they always are.
Buy him a new go-kart. Tell him to get the hell out. I don't care. I want him gone. And that includes that special teams coach. It even bled over to our great kicker. Even he, it could be argued that he made that field goal against Tennessee.
Oh yeah,
it was we might not be having this conversation.
No. I mean that we don't. That you're the first person to bring that up. But that was the tipping point in the season. He had saved Alabama against Texas. And I don't know what happened in that moment, because I firmly thought he would make it. I didn't think there was a doubt.
No, he'd been solid as a rock for 2 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still say it doesn't matter. I think the whole trophy is frivolous as hell anyway. No offense, seeing as you're a voter. And I think this young man at Southern Cal has played a great season. But I say that Bryce Young, in two losses, could the way he performed in those two
totally
losses
agree.
And what he did for that team, I felt like he was just thrown out there all on his own. And they also did the same damn thing with Will Anderson. And those players I just mentioned on the defensive line, if they had meat eaters like that there wouldn't have been no double teaming on Will Anderson or Dallas Turner, because that inside interior would have collapsed the other team completely. And we've seen it happen.
No,
so that's my dissertation.
Vance, you're 100% correct
on
a lot of what you said. I appreciate it, and you be well. Thanks for the call. We head to the break. More of your phone calls, more guests to come. It's been a busy one on a Wednesday.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back here. Appreciate it. Let's continue with Paul in Alabama. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Hey.
I've called you once before. So hard to get through.
Well, thank you
I've
for calling.
I've tried a lot of time. I had a suggestion I'd like to make.
Okay.
Of course, it's your decision, but I would like to enjoy the show more if. It seems like me, I've only got through two times. The other time was when I had a good story to tell about the Georgia announcer when he died, you know, about killing all the ducks. But
yeah,
what I'm wish you would consider is not having the same people on. Seem like it's real easy to get through and Darrell and Larry and Legend and that other guy, Handsome, whatever his name. And so, you know, more different people to get to. And then there's some guy been getting on a lot here lately from up either Michigan or Ohio somewhere. Kind of a nut, too. But that's just a suggestion I wanted thought maybe you would consider.
Well, I appreciate that, Paul, but, and I'm glad you got through.
I mean, you know, have them on, but not so much, you know.
I fully understand, and one thing, we don't want this show to be about four or five callers. We want it to be about everyone. Thank you for the call. Laura is up next in Virginia. Hello, Laura. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I'm a little concerned. I'm a huge Alabama fan. I've always been a huge Alabama fan. And I'm not too concerned about the fact that they're not in the playoffs this year. I mean, I understand they haven't played as well as they should have in past years. But I'm a little concerned about this whole situation with the CFP and all. What's going on with USC? And I'm not a huge USC fan by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, what's going on with all that?
Well, USC is in a situation where they're sitting there at number four. They play Utah Friday night. If they win, they're going to get in. So I think it's really simple. If they lose, they're out. So there really isn't.
Okay.
There's no gray area about USC. They have to win the game. And part of the reason they have to win is they've already lost to that same team. You can't lose to the same team twice.
Exactly. You know, I'm not a Georgia fan. I'm like, Virginia's not that far from Georgia, but I'm not a Georgia fan, and so I don't care. But I just don't want them to win another championship. I just can't. I can't stand it. If that's to happen, you know, although I'm a huge SEC fan, but I just don't want Georgia to win another championship.
I mean, not to get too far ahead here, but if somehow in early January Georgia has won again, it makes it even more difficult for Alabama to claim that they're in the middle of a dynasty.
Why do you say that? I don't understand.
Well, but I mean by that is, dynasties are, you know, being dominant, and that would mean that another SEC team has won 2 years in a row, and Alabama has won one time during that 5 years. And
I think
that would be hard to handle for Alabama fans.
Yeah, it would be. Exactly. You're right. And I'm one of them. I mean, I was really but I'm like, but, you know, we've got to get through, you know, the other three teams that are in the playoff right now if – Georgia should get that far, you know. I mean, they got to get through LSU first on Saturday. And I'm hoping that LSU does not win Saturday. I'm just hoping that Georgia will go ahead and win Saturday because I think Georgia's a better team for sure, you know.
Well, yeah, I think they are too. I mean, it would be a mammoth, a massive upset. And the weird part about Georgia losing the game is it wouldn't really change much for Georgia, and it wouldn't change much for
LSU.
They would probably end up with a better bowl game, but that would be bad.
Right.
Well, listen, Laura, thank you very much for your call. It's really good to hear from you. Let's talk to AJ, who is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
I appreciate you taking my call. I'm sitting out here looking at the lovely Logan Martin Lake here in Fell City, Alabama, just smiling.
That is a pretty place.
It is beautiful. It's beautiful. Paul, I got a problem with Legends call yesterday. I don't try to call in and pick at people like Jim and Legend and I-Man does. But I think he took advantage of his platform yesterday on your calls. That was one of the most disgusting calls that I've ever heard. He's going to pimp slap somebody in Greg McElroy when he absolutely praised McElroy a few years ago when he was winning one of them rings he likes to kiss on.
And, I would agree with you, and ultimately the responsibility is up to me, and I let that thing go too far, and I've heard from a lot of you, and I agree with you. I should have jumped in. I didn't. And sometimes you just you have a bad day, and I think I had a pretty bad day yesterday on that call.
Sometimes you drop the ball.
I did. I fumbled at the
it's
goal
all good.
Line there.
It's all good. And all due respect to you for being able to manage your calls throughout the afternoon. You do a great job on your show daily, not just
you know something,
once,
AJ?
Once a
week. I am a fan of the calls. I was on a show in Boston today talking about our callers. And, you know, they're very famous around the country. This show, it's the number one show in Boston. And they play cuts of our callers all the time, and I was talking about it because I am I'm an advocate, and sometimes, and this may, I don't want this to sound like an excuse because I was wrong, but I'm in the middle of the call cheering, and all of a sudden I realized it's too late. This thing has gotten away from me, and that one I could not get back.
I totally understand. I'll tell you one thing about Legend. The difference between him and Greg McElroy is when Greg bent over, he was receiving a football, And when Legend was in prison, it may not have been the same size ball.
No. AJ, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Somebody who has not been to prison, I don't think, but still has a prospect of getting there one of these days is our next guest, Andy Staples. He'll join us right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, welcome back here. Always great to catch up with Andy Staples. It's been a while since we've had a chance to get Andy on here. Andy, good afternoon. Thank you. And here we are knocking on the door of the final weekend of the semi-regular season. It's championship week. I won't ask you all the predictable CFP questions, but what are you watching for this weekend as we say goodbye to the regular season?
Well, you got some pretty narrow spreads in the USC-Utah game and in the TCU-Kansas State game, and it feels like Vegas is telling us something could happen that could allow somebody outside the top four into the playoff. And right now it feels like Ohio State is in position to jump in there should one of those teams lose. It'll be interesting. If USC loses, that's a pretty cut and dried. I doubt they would keep them in there as a two-loss team over a one-loss Ohio State. But TCU is a different animal there, because that would be a one-loss team. It would be a one-loss team without a conference championship, but Ohio State doesn't even have a division championship. So I'm very curious to see. I am of the mind that if the committee gets in that position again, they'll do what they always do, which is say, if these two teams played, who do we think would win? And they'll go with the team they think that would win. And in all those cases, I think it's Ohio State.
I know a lot of people have just obliterated Ohio State and said they don't belong and all that, but and they're arguing for Alabama. I don't think that really matters anymore, because unless I misread the tea leaves this morning, it looks like Alabama has finally seen its path shut down, has it not?
I think so, but if they were to both lose, if USC and TCU were to both lose and there was both blowouts, then maybe, but I don't think it's going to happen. But again, with Alabama, it's hard to say no, because the committee clearly likes them. I mean, they have the same record as Tennessee. They lost to Tennessee, and they're still ranked ahead of Tennessee. And that's not really the case with similar situations further down the ranking. So it's one of those, I'll believe it when I see a top four without them, that it's without them. But it doesn't feel like they have a lot of a path.
And Andy, I know that they'll have a bowl game, and we don't know who will be in it. But what is your almost final read on this Alabama football season, where expectations were so high?
It's got to be really frustrating, because you lost two games on the final play. Now, you also won the Texas A&M game on the final play and won the Texas game on the final play, and those were teams that really you shouldn't have been in close games with. So this is not the team that we thought it was going to be. It was not as good top to bottom. It still has great high-end talent, obviously. Bryce Young and Will Anderson could be number one and number two in the NFL draft next year, which is wild to me. But the fact that they don't have that elite wide receiver or two, and we've gotten so used to them having just a ton of guys at that position who are very dynamic and very dominant, they didn't have that this year. It didn't work out that way. And I think it hurt them. I mean, that's you've got those guys. You're beating Tennessee. You're beating LSU. And we're not having this conversation because they're in the playoff.
Andy, before we get to the coaching carousel, as we look back on the SEC season heading to Atlanta, at least we are. I don't know who else is. What surprised you the most in all the things and all the vagaries of predictions that we saw in July in Atlanta? What surprised you the most this year?
That's a good question. I mean, Tennessee still surprised me the most, because even though they got up so high and they were number one in the first CFP ranking, and then they had the loss to Georgia and they got blown out by South Carolina, that they are here at 10-2, because I remember thinking in the spring and in the summer. I went and visited Knoxville in the spring. I was like, these guys overachieved a little bit last year, especially given the situation that this coaching staff walked into. Is that fan base going to be disappointed because they did overachieve and now maybe they regress a little bit to the mean? They didn't do that. They got better. And, you know, if you'd have told a Tennessee fan before this season started, hey, you're going to beat Alabama, you're going 10-2, you're going to a New Year's Six Bowl, they would have been like, holy cow, what a season. It's now they're disappointed because of the way it timed out. But I think it's one of those when you look back on it in a few months, you're going to go, whoa, Josh Heupel's got some cooking there.
And the other side of it is Texas A&M, which, give Jimbo Fisher credit, he managed to stem the tide of a terrible season with a really important win. But what do we read into the way this season went for him, and what does it mean for the future?
It's a good question, Paul, because from a leverage standpoint, based on his contract, he didn't really have to do anything. But you saw they fired Daryl Dickey this week, and Daryl Dickey was offensive coordinator in name only. Jimbo's the play caller. You see he's got that Cheesecake Factory menu in front of him every game. There's a lot of pressure on him to give up play calling, to hire an offensive coordinator who's going to come in and install a system. And at this point, that may be the way to go, because Jimbo's offense, and you saw it on Saturday against LSU, the plays are there, but they weren't always the plays that he was calling that his players were good at running. And he needs somebody either to tell him and remind him, or someone who just calls the plays, to call the plays that the players can actually run. Because if you do that more this season, you have a better season than you had. And, you know, I'm very curious how this goes. The transfer portal will be opening soon. They've had a couple guys say they're going in, but they're not guys who played. If they don't have guys who actually played for them, or, you know, young guys who showed promise going into the portal, if those guys say, you know what, I'm here, I'm good, then I think they're still in decent shape. Now, Jimbo has to prove that he can evolve and they can avoid a season like this and actually use all of that top-end talent to have the season they're supposed to have. But if they can keep the roster together, that's a really good sign.
Let's get to Hugh Freeze, announced yesterday as Auburn's new coach. Anyone who has been around the SEC at the levels you have dealt with Hugh Freeze. First of all, before we even get to the hire, what's he like to deal with? Because you hear people say he's thin-skinned, he's difficult. We had one guest on earlier, Pete Thamel, called him a televangelist. What's your experience been like with Hugh
Freeze? His vibe is megachurch preacher. Like, that's, you've met a few of those guys. That's how he comes off. But, you know, in the interactions I've had with him, they've been mostly good. We've had some unpleasant ones. I had to write a story when, you know, Ole Miss had missed some of those phone calls, and I found them in the records, and somebody had tipped me off. And so I had to write another story, and I had to call and text him and be like, hey, this is going to come out. I will say, with that stuff, he's always been, hey, it happened. I'm not making excuses, that, you know, that sort of thing. And he doesn't necessarily hold it against you as a reporter that you had to report it. And it some people do. But, yeah, you know, I understand where the backlash is coming from at Auburn. And it's coming kind of in two ways, because there's the people who don't like Hugh Freeze as a person, and I understand why they say that. And then there's the people who don't like the hire from a football standpoint. And I will agree with them that this is essentially Auburn saying, we messed up hiring Gus Malzahn. We're now going to hire a friend of Gus Malzahn, who it's a lot of the same thing. Now, I will argue that Hugh Freeze, from a recruiting standpoint, from a schematic standpoint, he's been good everywhere he's been. So I think some of the criticisms from a football standpoint are a little off, because he has made his team better everywhere he's been, and that offense has gotten better and more exciting and more interesting and tougher to stop everywhere he's been. So, like, Ari Wasserman, my co-host on the podcast, said, you know, is he the person that makes Nick Saban go, dang, I wish they hadn't hired him? I think he's one of those people. So from that standpoint, that's what you want at Auburn. You want someone who will recruit against Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, because that's not something Brian Harsin seemed willing to do. And you want someone who will produce an offense that generates points and yards every year. And that is something that Hugh Freeze has historically done. So they've decided that they can deal with the public backlash as far as the off-field stuff goes. And whether that is true or not is another question, because he just got there. And you're going to see people complaining. You're going to see, you know, I think they were worried about there being protests or stuff like that. We'll see what happens. But, you know, Auburn's kind of dug in on this. You know, this is what they've decided. So now you just got to go with it.
Not to put you in a position to give commentary on other critics, but it does seem accurate that the largest and the loudest criticism is coming from people that really don't cover college football at the SEC level. They're just coming from around the country who hear the name Hugh Freeze and have a negative connotation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but I mean, they can feel however they want to about this. I'm not going to say that their complaints are invalid. Like, he should not be reaching out to the lady at Liberty who's complaining about the school potentially covering up sexual assaults. Like, you don't need to be reaching out and DMing her defending Ian McCaw. Ian McCaw's got a track record that's pretty public. So, you know, what you say to her via DMs, and why are you reaching out without any sort of provocation? That makes no sense to me. So that is something that I would imagine you got to work on at Auburn, because when you're the head coach at Ole Miss or the head coach at Liberty, and Ole Miss is an SEC school, there's a lot of attention, but it's not the same level as a school like Auburn or LSU or Alabama or Tennessee. You're the head coach at Auburn. You can't be doing stuff like that. Like, you can't be searching your name and randomly DMing people you think have slighted you. You just can't. It's a waste of your time, because there are going to be tons of people who have lots of terrible things to say about you. Whether you've got any baggage or not. I mean, Gus Malzahn had people saying terrible things about him, and he doesn't have that. So I think that's the part that he's got to reconcile in this job. And it sounds, you know, based on what he's said so far, he understands that. So can he do it? The first time he feels like he's been slighted, is it going to be sliding into the DMs? I don't know. But if he wins a bunch of games there, I got a feeling, at least among the Auburn fan base, because there is a portion of the Auburn fan base that is not pleased with this hire, that goes away. You know, those people sort of say, okay, you know what? He's winning games. That's really all it is. And I will say, I remember reading the press release when he got hired, the John Cohen quote, the athletic director. And because I was like, I despise, and this is not unique to this particular hire, I despise when athletic departments, athletic directors, school presidents turn the hiring of a coach into a morality play, and they act like every person they've hired is a saint, and they're going to, you know, all they're doing is for the betterment of the young men. And no, you hired this coach because you think they will win football games. You will not fire him for not creating better young men. You will fire him if he loses too many football games. Like, that's what this is all about. And they did stick to that, at least in their initial announcement. And so I thought that was a fairly shrewd PR move on their part.
On the DM, and we'll close here, Hugh Freeze alluded to it in one of the meetings.
Yeah, he talked to Chris Lowe about it. Yeah. He said he regrets it. And he should regret it. Don't do that.
But my question on that, though, Andy, is these are all the things, these impulsive reactions of Hugh Freeze that collectively got him fired. At Ole Miss. We're now years past that, rehabilitated, gone to Jerry Falwell's university. And the fact that it happened again, and we know of this one, we don't know maybe he's done it. Should that be disturbing? And it doesn't seem like Auburn really cared a whole lot about that.
I think they cared about it from an image standpoint. Right. I think they wanted to hire him as their
coach. Well, they hired him, though. Didn't stop them.
Right. That's why they hired him, because – like I just said, the job description really is to win football games. And he's the person who, you know, isn't Lane Kiffin, who decided to stay at Ole Miss, who best fits who might be able to win football games at Auburn. That's really what this is. And, you know, I don't know what happens in the future. I will say the stuff that happened at Ole Miss cost him millions and millions of dollars. So whatever, you know, redemption story anybody wants to push or anything like that, even if we're just breaking it down to brass tacks, not even talking about morality or anything else, financially, it was a disaster. You'd think that teaches a lesson. We'll see.
We will. Andy Staples, some sobering comments there, joining us on the show today, and we head to the break. Blake Topmeyer has some strong comments about the Hugh Freeze hire. He works for USA Today, and he'll join us in a couple of minutes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. Blake Topmeyer in a few minutes. How about Squirrel up next?
Appreciate you taking my call, and I'll try to be quick. I know a lot of people are trying to get on, just a couple things. And I meant to call you a couple weeks ago when this happened, but Kiffin does a call-in show every week. I think it's maybe Monday nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, I don't know, from Bure on the square. And I think you've been eating at Bure a time or two.
Great place.
And they pass around the microphones and things of that nature. And one of the questions one of the fans posed to him was, what's your relationship with Paul Feinbaum now? And he went on and on. You would have, I don't know. Did you catch wind of that?
No, I did not.
He was highly complimentary. And he immediately perked up and talked about the relationship was kind of rocky at first. He said, but you guys are practically BFS right now. And but he was, I meant to tell you, he was super complimentary of you.
Oh, that's nice of him. I wish I'd known before I blasted him the other day.
Well, tell him to tighten up his grip on his handshakes a little bit, too. I mean, you know, I told you about the weak handshake. But the other thing is, it's been kind of amusing hearing everyone criticize your number one leg humper's call yesterday afternoon. And it was good of you to kind of own it. But if I could describe Legend in this one word, I think I'd use the word sleazy. And yesterday's call kind of, you know, just kind of proved that in a sense. I mean, were you a little bit embarrassed?
Yes. The caller to hijack the call.
Well, you allow all of us to hijack the call.
I usually don't get that deep into the pool, though.
Well, you just kind of went along with it instead of just finally just going, wait a minute. But again, you get, you know, when it comes to Legend, you kind of get, you know, like I said, he's one of your favorite callers. There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You treat him if you want to. But you should have saw a red flag a month or two ago when he thanked you for helping him overcome his addiction to porn. That should have been the first red flag right there. But it's up to the callers to kind of be responsible for their own call and for keeping it. You ain't got to keep it classy, but you can have some class with your call and maybe not take it to, again, the sleazy level that Legend likes to go to. But when you're a cockroach, you can't help but be sleazy. But to finish it off, I really like the story about the uncle, you know, helping him out when he got out of prison. Except I think the uncle was really trying to transition it for him. So instead of a woman, I think he bought him a shemale. I'm not sure, but maybe Legend can expound on that. Thanks for taking my call. Aloha.
Jeremy is up next.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. I really appreciate you taking my call, but I got a real quick question. Been a dog fan my whole life, and I know the repeating is very difficult, and I know it's not been done a whole lot. What is your opinion on Georgia maybe accomplishing that?
I feel good. I'm really intrigued by the matchup, whether it's USC or someone else. Georgia has the propensity to often play down, and that could put them in a dangerous situation, especially if it's against Southern Cal with Caleb Williams, who can light you up when you're not paying attention. But I still feel pretty comfortable right now in Georgia winning it all. We'll take a break. We have another hour to go. Blake Topmeyer, the USA Today columnist, on the changing of the guard in the SEC and also the hiring of Hugh Freeze.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.